we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today on the program. This is one of our live editions of the program here on AFR. Once again, Walker Wildman and Rick Green were your host each week. It's good to be back in the saddle. And I spent the last 9 days or so in Israel, the Holy Land, on a trip. And it was a wonderful trip. It had been 2 years since we had been in Israel. We went in 2023. So good to be back in the Holy Land. There was a lot to take away from our trip. Yes, we were safe. You know, the running joke is we only spend a day in New York when we go to Israel. And I honestly feel safer in Israel than I do in Memphis, Tennessee. And I'm not being sarcastic either. So our trip was good. I was doing some this is a side note, but I was doing some study on the homicide rate in Israel versus cities like Chicago and Memphis. And, of course, it's higher domestically. The homicide rate's higher in some major U.S. cities even compared to Israel as a whole. So it's to say I'm safer in Israel is honestly not a cynical statement or a joke. So we had a good trip to Israel. And maybe it's because I've been there 9 times. I feel safe there. But all around, it was a very, very good trip. And, of course, they are, you know, in a war with Hamas and Hezbollah. But on the interior of Israel, it's actually a pretty safe country on the interior. So we had a good time, and we'll be back, Lord willing, next year in the land of the Bible. And that registration will open with Wildman Group Tours here in the coming weeks. Well, let's turn our attention to the scripture. Psalm 149 is where we are this week. Praise the Lord. Sing to the Lord a new song, and his praise in the congregation of the godly ones. Let Israel be glad in his maker. Sing to the Lord a new song. That's Psalm 149, verse 1. So it's okay, it's good to sing a new song to the Lord. Well, we're going to have two jam-packed segments before we bring Chris Woodward on in the last segment, as we do each Friday. But before we jump into the news of the day that we're going to talk about the next two segments, I want to mention two things. Our Activate Summit, our first ever Activate Summit, is coming up this summer, June 12th through 14th. And we want you to come join us here in Tupelo, Mississippi, June 12th through the 14th, 2025. Activate Summit. It's our first annual Activate Summit. The theme is Biblical Bedrock, Building on the Authority of Scripture. We're going to have speakers like Todd Herman, Alex McFarland, Abraham Hamilton III, and many, many others here at our Activate Summit. So come join us here in Tupelo, Mississippi, June 12th through the 14th. If you want to know more, just simply go to activate.afa.net, activate.afa.net. And you can visit the registration there on the homepage at activate.afa.net. Also, don't forget to visit culturewarrior.movie to check out our latest documentary. And we're going to have on some guests next week to talk more about how to watch Culture Warrior. But for now, culturewarrior.movie is the URL, culturewarrior.movie. We've got the show right now live streaming on Facebook and AFA Stream. So if you want to watch the program, you can go to our Facebook page at The Core or go over to stream.afa.net and log in there to watch the live broadcast here on American Family Radio. All right, jumping into what's going on, breaking news within the last few hours. President Zelensky from Ukraine was planning to visit the White House and sign this mineral rights deal that was aimed at helping the United States recoup some of our cost that has been incurred with the war in Ukraine over the last 3 years. So President Trump was meeting with President Zelensky in the Oval Office. They were going to have a press conference. They were going to sign the deal. This has been anticipated for the last 1 to 2 weeks. But as of just a couple hours ago, this whole thing just fell apart. The whole thing fell apart. And I kind of caught up with it about halfway through this Oval Office disaster is what it was. So we'll give you a little more background here, but that's the context. And remember, this deal's kind of been on thin ice to begin with, because it's clear that Ukraine, or specifically Vladimir Zelensky, has been having a really hard time coming to grips with the fact that the U.S. can't just keep open-endedly supporting this war, both financially and with military aid. It just doesn't make sense for America to endlessly support Ukraine without any type of strategic goals, strategic objectives, and any way to recoup our cost. It just doesn't make sense. So President Trump campaigned on ending the war. He campaigned on peace. He campaigned on a ceasefire, on saving lives. And so he's simply fulfilling something he campaigned on. So fast forward to today, Zelensky comes into the Oval Office, and they're doing the usual opening statements, questions, back and forth. It's usually very cordial, very kind of relaxed, if you will, and it allows the press to come in and ask questions. And so that's the context here. And so I'm going to play first President Trump's opening remarks, which were, I thought, were very generous. I mean, President Trump didn't take any shots at Zelensky, didn't take any shots at Ukraine, didn't go low. President Trump just gave this general 3-minute opening remark. So let's start there, and then we'll walk our way through this over the next few segments. Clip one, let's listen.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to have President Zelensky of Ukraine. And we've been working very hard, very close. And we've actually known each other for a long time. We've been dealing with each other for a long time and very well. We had a little negotiation spat, but that worked out great, I think, for both countries. I think for the world, actually, beyond both countries. And we have something that is a very fair deal. And we look forward to getting in and digging and working and getting some of the rare earth. But it means we're going to be inside, and it's a big commitment from the United States. And we appreciate working with you very much. And we will continue to do that. We have had some very good discussions with Russia. I spoke with President Putin, and we're going to try and bring this to a close. It's something that you want and that he wants. We have to negotiate a deal. But we've started the confines of a deal, and I think something can happen. The big thing is the number of soldiers, mostly at this point, but soldiers being killed. You're losing thousands of soldiers. So on both sides, we're losing a lot of soldiers, and we want to see it stop. And we want to see the money get put to different kinds of use, like rebuilding. And we're going to be working very hard, but we've had a lot of very good conversations. I will say, until we came along, the Biden administration didn't speak to Russia whatsoever. They didn't speak to anybody. They just allowed this to continue. And I will say that I'll say in front of you, you've heard me say it 1,000 times. If I were president, this war would have never happened. We would have had a deal negotiated for you without having to go through what you've gone through. But you, your soldiers have been unbelievably brave. We've given them great equipment, but somebody has to use the equipment. They've been unbelievably brave. And we give them great credit. This was supposed to be over very quickly, and here we are 3 years later. So I give tremendous credit to your generals and your soldiers and yourself, in the sense that it's been very hard fighting, very tough fighting. They're great fighters, and you have to be very proud of them from that standpoint. But now we want to get it over with. It's enough, right? We want to get it over with. So. It's an honor to have you here. Thank you very much for coming. We're going to sign the agreement at the conference in the East Room in a little while, right after lunch. And we'll be having lunch together. We're also discussing some other things. And we appreciate everybody being here. It's a somewhat of an exciting moment. But the really exciting moment is when we get a when they stop the shooting and we end up with a deal. And I think we're fairly close to getting that, and an honor to have you.
All right, so that's the summation of President Trump's opening remarks in the Oval Office. And let me give a little backdrop before we continue playing clips. I've got two more. One of them is pretty lengthy, which we'll play in the next segment. But before we get into this spat that Trump and Vance and Zelensky had in the Oval Office on live television, might I add, let's go back. Okay, let's remember the context here. All right. Trump did not get Ukraine into this mess. This happened under Biden's watch. This has happened. Putin's aggression towards Ukraine has occurred under both Obama and Biden, respectively. And Biden was, of course, notoriously VP during the Obama era. So Biden's been around through both sagas. But this happened under Obama and Biden, respectively. Trump literally had nothing to do with this. So Trump is not responsible under any circumstance for what has happened in Ukraine with Russia. So Trump showing up to a situation that has already spiraled completely out of control, and he's trying to end the mass slaughter of Russians and Ukrainians. Because tens of thousands of soldiers on both sides have died. Furthermore, let's remember that this Ukraine is not a NATO member country. Okay, as much as people talk about Ukraine as if they are a NATO member country, folks, they are not. There's no Article 5 clause here. Ukraine is not a NATO member country. Well, I wish they were. Well, that's not going to cut it because they're not, okay? Well, they're de facto a NATO member country. No, that's not how it works, okay? They are not a NATO member country. Thus, we are not obligated, according to Article 5 of the NATO Pact, to defend their soil. Everything that we do to defend Ukraine, to supply Ukraine, is purely voluntary. Purely voluntary. Not to mention, this whole thing started, arguably, because of provocative moves that both NATO and the U.S. were making in Ukraine leading up to this war. And we can talk about that. We can talk about NATO continuing to talk about Ukraine joining NATO, despite the fact that Putin made it very clear that I cannot have a NATO member country on my border. We can talk about the various U.S. assets and agencies that were on the ground operating in Ukraine in a provocative move at Putin. But aside from all that, this is not really, I'm not here to defend Putin under any circumstance. There's no question, there's nobody that I know trying to justify Putin invading Ukraine from a moral and an objective standpoint. We can get into whether there were things that were done that provoked him, yes, but at the end of the day, Putin and Russia invaded Ukraine, which was a sovereign territory, and they shouldn't have done that. That's the absolute truth. But the question that we're dealing with 3 years later, after we've spent $350 billion supporting Ukraine, is where do we go from here? And that's the golden question that President Trump is dealing with as he inherited this absolute dumpster fire of the Biden administration. The question that Trump is dealing with is, where do we go from here? That's what we'll talk about after the break.
We live in a day when America's families are under attack like never before.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
The war against biblical principles rages on numerous fronts. The internet, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., America's corporate boardrooms, and the list goes on. At American Family Association, we're committed to standing against the enemies of God, the enemies of your family. And we recognize it's an impossible task without God's favor and your partnership. Thank you for being faithful to pray for this ministry, to give financially, and to respond to our calls for activism. What you do on the home front is crucial to what we do on the battlefront. We praise God for your faithfulness, and may He give us many victories in the battles ahead as we work together to restore our nation's biblical foundations.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you. We're talking about this back and forth in the Oval Office just this morning with President Trump and President Zelensky from Ukraine, where this entire mineral deal, where the American government was attempting to recoup some of our cost that we've spent supporting Ukraine over the last 3 years. With the whole deal fell through because of this Oval Office back and forth. But continuing this context before we continue setting up more playing more clips, just continuing to provide some facts around this. The United States early on. In this, when Russia decided to invade Ukraine, the American people, the majority, I would say, maybe not the vast majority, but the majority of the American people were very supportive of the U.S. supporting Ukraine. Now, what that support looks like and what that means, that's still open-ended. But the general sense amongst the American people in the early days and weeks of this Russia invasion of Ukraine 3 years ago was, sure, of course, the U.S. ought to do what it can without putting boots on the ground to support Ukraine, because they should have not been invaded because they're a sovereign country. So that was the consensus in the early days, weeks, and months of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Where some people in our country, like myself, and once again, all of this stuff can be verified. If you have the time to go pull up the clips, you're welcome to do it. I don't have the time to do it. But one thing I specifically warned about in the early weeks, probably the first several weeks, maybe few months of this conflict, one thing I explicitly warned about is America open-endedly committing to funding the war without any strings attached, without any objective goals, just blanket blank check to the Ukrainian government that we'll fund your war as long as you want. That's one thing I warned about. Because let's not forget, we had just withdrawn from Afghanistan. Now, the withdrawal was an absolute disaster. But there was broad consensus that we needed to get out. But it didn't have to go down like that. So the withdrawal was an absolute disaster. But the fact that we withdrew was actually a good thing. Probably one of the few good things Biden did. But how they went about it was embarrassing, humiliating, and tragic. 13 U.S. military members lost their lives because of that. Because of how they went about withdrawing. But we were not far removed from the Afghanistan withdrawal, and then boom, here comes another war. And the American people are so fed up with everybody else's wars. Are you not tired of war? And it's one thing to say, well, we're going to war for America's interests because our homeland is threatened. But it's a whole other thing to flush billions of dollars down the drain, bankrupt our children and grandchildren for a war in Europe that is probably three steps removed from us. Russia is not on our border. Neither is Ukraine, obviously. This isn't a border. This isn't a dispute that is flushing up on America's sovereign borders. They're not a NATO member country. And there's no direct threat to the American homeland or the American people. Now, once again, that doesn't mean that that supporting Ukraine isn't somewhat of a noble cause. But saying it's a noble cause and then directly tethering it to American interest are two different things. And this is what we lose sight on. And so I'm so tired of this. America should be the referee and the policeman and the blank check on the world stage. And I think if you poll the American people, they're so over it as well. The appetite for more war in this country is minute. It's faint. I'm not even sure it exists. There's no appetite amongst the populace for more war around the world. And then you add on top of that the disaster of domestic policy that is going on currently in our homeland. You've had 4 years under Biden of open borders, terrible economy, overdose deaths out the roof, violent crime in America's cities, bankrupting of future generations. And we want to be lectured to about funding a multi-billion dollar war in Ukraine. And so that's the context. That's the context. And Zelensky's there's been indications of problems with Zelensky in the recent weeks because he keeps running his mouth. They're having private negotiations, the diplomats are, between the U.S. and Ukraine on this mineral rights deal. And Zelensky keeps running his mouth doing these interviews over in Europe and in Ukraine. And so that was red flag number one. But let's continue on here. Let's listen to this about 4-minute clip between J.D. Vance, the vice president, Vladimir Zelensky. President Trump jumps in here as well. And listen to the arrogance. And listen to Zelensky continue to interrupt the vice president and the president. And he begins interrogating them in the Oval Office, asking them questions in the Oval Office about their moral position on this Ukraine and Russia deal. Let's listen.
What kind of diplomacy, JD, you are speaking about? What do you mean?
I'm talking about the kind of diplomacy that's going to end the destruction of your country.
Yes, but if you are not strong,
Mr. President, with respect, I think it's disrespectful for you to come into the Oval Office and try to litigate this in front of the American media. Right now, you guys are going around and forcing conscripts to the front lines because you have manpower problems. You should be thanking the president for trying to bring it into this conflict.
Have you ever been to Ukraine that you say what problems we have?
I have been to...
Come once.
I've actually watched and seen the stories, and I know what happens is you bring them on a propaganda tour, Mr. President. Do you disagree that you've had problems bringing people into your military?
We have problems.
And do you think that it's respectful to come to the Oval Office of the United States of America and attack the administration that is trying to prevent the destruction of your country?
A lot of questions. Let's start from the beginning.
Sure.
First of all, during the war, everybody has problems, even you, but you have nice ocean and don't feel now, but you will feel it in the future. God bless you, you will not have war.
Don't tell us what we're going to feel. We're trying to solve a problem. Don't tell us what we're going to feel.
I'm not telling you.
Because
I'm
you're in no position to dictate that.
That's
remember
exactly
this.
I'm not dictating.
You're in no position to dictate what we're going to feel. We're going to feel very good and very strong.
You will feel influence.
You're right now not in a very good position. You've allowed
from
yourself
very,
to be in a very bad
very
position, and he happens
war.
To be right about
from
it.
From the very beginning of the war,
you're not
Mr.
in a good position.
I don't have the cards
right now. With us, you start
I'm
having
not
cards.
Playing cards.
Right now, you
I'm
don't. Yeah, you're
serious,
playing cards.
Mr. President.
You're playing
I'm very
cards.
Serious.
You're gambling
the
with the lives of millions of people.
You think
you're gambling with World War III. You're gambling with World War III. And what you're doing is very disrespectful to the country, this country.
I'm
it's
with
back
all respect to
you. Far more than a lot of people said they should have.
Have you said thank you once?
A lot of times.
No.
Even today.
You said thank you.
Even today.
You went to Pennsylvania and campaigned for the opposition in October. Oh. Offer some words of appreciation for the United States of America and the president who's trying to save your country.
Please. You think that if you will speak very loudly about the war,
He's not speaking loudly. He's not speaking loudly. Your country is in big trouble.
Can I answer?
Wait a minute. No. You've done a lot of talking. Your country is in big trouble.
I know.
You're not winning.
I know.
You're not winning this. You have a good chance of coming out okay because of us.
Mr. President, we are staying in our country, staying strong from the very beginning of the war. We've been alone, and we are thankful. I said thanks
in
this cabinet, and not only in this cabinet.
We gave you, through this stupid president, $350 billion.
You voted for your president.
We gave you military equipment, and
you
men are brave, but they had to use our military.
What about West?
If you didn't have our military equipment, if you didn't have our military equipment, this war would have been over in 2 weeks.
In three days. I heard it from Putin. In 3 days. This is something
maybe
new.
Less.
In 2 weeks. Of course, yes.
It's going to be a very hard thing to do business like this.
Again,
I tell you.
Just say thank you.
Said a lot of times thank you to American people.
Except that there are disagreements, and let's go litigate those disagreements rather than trying to fight it out in the American media when you're wrong. We know that you're wrong.
But you see, I think it's good for the American people to see what's going on.
Yep.
I think it's very important. That's why I kept this going so long. You have to be thankful. You don't have the cards.
I'm thankful.
You're buried there. Your people are dying.
I can tell you
you're
again.
Running low on soldiers.
Don't,
listen.
Don't, please,
you're running
Mr.
low
President.
On soldiers. It would be a good
Mr.
thing. And then you tell us, I don't want a ceasefire. I don't want a ceasefire. I want to go, and I want this. Look. If you could get a ceasefire right now, I tell you, you take it so the bullets stop flying and your men stop getting killed.
Of course, we want to stop the war. But
you're
I
saying
said,
you don't want a ceasefire.
But I said to you,
I want a ceasefire.
With guarantees.
Because you'll get a ceasefire faster than an agreement.
Ask our people about ceasefire. What they think?
That wasn't
it doesn't
with
matter
me.
For you what
That wasn't
what
with me. That was with a guy named Biden who was not a smart person. That was
your,
with,
this
that was
is
with
your
Obama.
President. It was your president.
Excuse me. That was with Obama who gave you sheets and I gave you javelins.
Yep.
Yes.
I gave you the javelins to take out all those tanks. Obama gave you sheets. In fact, the statement is Obama gave sheets and Trump gave javelins. You got to be more thankful because let me tell you, you don't have the cards. With us, you have the cards. But without us, you don't have any cards.
Well, there you have it. Without the U.S., you don't have any cards. And that's true, folks. That's true. So I think this means that the U.S. just needs to pull out of this whole fiasco altogether.
Don't be surprised if that's not
no,
the next
I think
step.
President Trump needs to pull out of this fiasco altogether.
Yeah.
We're trying to be the adults on the world stage. Okay? And first off, we've got to stop the warmongering and the giddiness that our leaders have for war is actually very concerning from a moral standpoint, okay? Because I'm so sick and tired, and I'm talking about the Congress. I'm talking about the senators and Biden. I am so sick and tired of senators, Republican senators, one from my home state here, that all they want to do is go chest thump with Zelensky and cheer on the war. Meanwhile, we've got men and young boys getting slaughtered in the trenches in Ukraine. Let's do it. Let's do a check on our humanity here. And before we want to argue about the justification of the defense of Ukraine, well, okay, that's an important point, right? Who's in the wrong here? Well, Putin's in the wrong initially because he shouldn't have invaded Ukraine. That's an established fact. Nobody with credibility is disputing that, okay? Now, we can get into whether it was provoked or not, but even if it wasn't provoked, Putin should have never invaded Ukraine. And nobody's arguing about that. But the question is, where do we go from here? We've got tens of thousands of young men getting slaughtered in the trenches in Ukraine and Russia, and where do we go from here? That's the question. And I think it's utterly repugnant for these U.S. senators in their comfortable suits and offices with their insider trading going on and their cush positions to be cheerleading more war. I don't think that's the high ground here. I really don't. Even with the wrongs of Russia and the wrongs of Putin, it's still not a morally high ground to want endless war and slaughter of citizens of both Russia and Ukraine in infinity, forever and ever. There's something wrong with that. But our I don't know whether it's the war machine, the military industrial complex. There's so billions of dollars at play here. We know there's kickbacks. We know that the same military contractors, they fund the campaigns of the senators. So we know the incestuous relationship here. This is not a clean black and white issue, folks. And so I think it's time that we put the U.S. senators, the U.S. congressmen on the podium, on the stand, and make them answer the hard questions about how long does this war go on? This is what's not talked about. They do all the propaganda. They go over to Ukraine. They take all the fancy pictures. They tour the battleground and chant and cheer for more war. And the position that they would say is, well, we've got to defeat Putin. That's what Zelensky said in the Oval Office. He said that verbatim. We've got to defeat Putin. Well, number one, what does that even mean? Please define that. Because if you think that you're going to push Russia back to the pre-war border, I don't think that's going to happen. Because we're on year number three now, my friend. We're on year number three. So the time to have pushed Putin back to the pre-invasion barriers and border, the time to do that was the last 36 months. And despite billions of U.S. dollars being spent over there, you haven't done that yet. Okay, so the time's up. The time's up. So now we have to discuss as adults and humans how much more killing we're going to allow to go on. And I think it's humiliating. I think it's embarrassing. I think it's morally repugnant for Zelensky to come to the Oval Office and lecture the American president about how the U.S. should feel about this when he's got 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds, 19-year-old young men getting slaughtered in the trenches in Ukraine over a border dispute. That's the morally wrong position at this juncture in this conflict.
Preborn celebrates that Roe versus Wade has been overturned. Roe has been responsible for the slaughter of over 63 million babies. Now the decision to abort a child will be left in the hands of the states, and sadly, abortions will continue in the most liberal states. Over the past 16 years, Preborn has positioned their clinics in the top abortion cities where 50% of abortions occur. Preborn's work of saving babies' lives continues at an even greater level as they save babies' lives and defend their centers from the radical hate groups who want to shut them down. Preborn's response is dependent on you, the pro-life community. Be a part of rescuing lives and changing hearts for Christ. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and $140 will help to rescue five babies' lives. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com. All gifts are tax deductible.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to the program. Walker Wildman here, American Family Radio. This is our live edition of the show. And Chris Woodward is in with us. Chris, what a news day to come in live.
Fridays never disappoint news-wise.
Yeah.
You know, just when you think, oh, I'm about to pack it in, something happens.
Yes. So just to break down, summarize what we've been talking about the last two segments. Ukraine President Zelensky and their delegation, they were in Washington today to sign this mineral rights deal. Mm-hmm. Remember, the mineral rights deal, the purpose of it from the U.S. perspective was to primarily recoup the cost, the financial cost that we've contributed to help support Ukraine. And then part of that would be giving America some kind of vested interest and Ukrainian peace because of the business relationship. So this very much would have dovetailed into a peace deal and a defense of Ukraine had the President Zelensky not completely fumbled his opportunity in the Oval Office by beginning to question the U.S. President and Vice President on their position on this war and this deal. And Chris, you were talking about Karl Rove's,
yes,
you know, running his mouth.
I have statements here.
Please raise my blood pressure, Chris.
Okay.
Tell me what Rove had to say about this.
So immediately after the shouting match heard around the Oval Office today, Fox News does this panel discussion here, and Karl Rove comes out, as he often does, to talk about various things. And in Karl Rove's opinion, he said, "This is why diplomacy should never be conducted in public." He went on to say that during World War II, there were heated disagreements between Roosevelt and Churchill and Stalin,
yeah,
but we didn't see those broadcast on TV. Number one, many people didn't have TVs back then, but I digress. he went on to say it's going to be incredibly hard to walk back. He said the only winner out of today is Vladimir Putin. This is a mistake to have it broadcast. This should have been done behind closed doors, out of camera sight. I'm confident, you know, they're going to have a way to move forward, but it's going to be hard given... It's going to be hard for us to get there given the kind of coverage we've just witnessed.
Yeah, so this is 100% on Zelensky. Zelensky, honestly, you want to know my honest opinion, because that's what I do, for better or worse. Zelensky should have went in there and shut his mouth. I wouldn't actually have answered any questions. If Zelensky has an emotional problem with talking about the war without dogging Putin and saying things like, he said, quote, "We will never have a ceasefire." That was Zelensky's statement in the White House Oval Office. If you have that much of a problem talking about this deal without getting emotional and upset, which I understand the emotional aspect of this because of how tough this has been on the Ukrainian people, but then if you can't handle this like an adult, then you just don't need to talk. And the problem is Zelensky couldn't keep his trap shut. He couldn't shut his mouth. And so he started talking, and when he started talking, another reason I think Zelensky kept running his mouth and he could not help himself, as disrespectful as he was in the Oval Office, is because, Chris, he's been paraded as the hero for the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right or wrong, he's been paraded as the hero for the last 3 years. And our little lapdog congressmen and senators, they keep going over to Ukraine and having these pep rallies for Zelensky.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's asked him any hard questions.
Right.
Nobody's asked him, "Mr. Zelensky, with all due respect, you know, what's your plan to end the war?
Mm-hmm.
What's an achievable goal that the U.S. can help you reach? You know, what's your position on the tens of thousands of Ukrainian soldiers that are getting slaughtered? You're having to force people into the war." You know, no hard questions here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what gave Zelensky kind of this arrogance to go into the Oval Office and turn the tables and start questioning the president.
Yes.
On his position.
Yeah. I mean, Ukraine still exists today because of American taxpayers.
Yes.
Not the federal government, not the Biden or Trump administration, the federal taxpayers. My unborn grandchildren and your unborn grandchildren are on the hook for Ukraine. And he needs to go there and he needs to realize, or he should have realized, he's between a rock and a hard place. I know it's a cliche, but he still has a country today to be a president over because of the American taxpayers. And that's one of the reasons why I appreciate the fact that you quickly and very easily corrected and kind of reminded people why it is that we're doing the mineral deal, or why we wanted to do the mineral deal. That has largely been left out of coverage from like CNN and MSNBC. They're all making it out to be as if Trump is saying, "You have to agree to your invaders, and oh, by the way, you're going to give us a chunk of all your mineral rights going forward."
Right.
It's an effort to recoup the money that we've been giving you over and over and over again. So he should have gone there very... political, you know, he should have behaved himself in a better situation.
Yeah.
And I think that's why a lot of people on X especially are appreciating President Trump and Vice President Vance for conducting themselves the way they did.
Yeah. And from a negotiating standpoint, this was setting Ukraine up for some type of success out of this whole thing, this whole disaster. Because if you give President Trump and his team what they want on this mineral rights deal, then that opens the door and builds credibility to then getting some kind of brokered peace deal and getting at least something out of it other than endless war and endless death. And I want to remind people that we're 3 years removed from the invasion. Mm-hmm. And so America went to bat for Ukraine for the last 3 years. And over the last 12 to 24 months, this war has actually been wildly unpopular amongst the American people. But the first 6 to 12 months, I would say the majority of the American people were like, yeah, you know, we need to support Ukraine. What's being done over there is wrong. Putin should not have invaded. It's a sovereign country. We need to do what we can, even though we have no moral or legal obligation because they're not a NATO member country. But once you get past 12 months of this war and then 24 months and 36 months, the question arises, what do we do from here? And that's what President Trump was handed.
Yeah, it's very clear that the Biden-Harris approach of we're going to defund the oligarchs, we're going to hit the oligarchs where it hurts and defund Putin's war machine. It's very clear that never worked.
No, it didn't.
Because he just kept on and the fighting continued.
Yes.
Trump tried to tell him today, and I'm paraphrasing the president for people that didn't hear it, we're trying to prevent World War III.
Yeah.
We're trying to save lives. You need to listen to us. You need to work with us. And then he just kept arguing.
Yes, he did. He kept arguing and interrupting. It was infuriating, absolutely infuriating. And finally, the vice president took him to task and set the record straight, which I'm glad. Look, when you if people will go back and watch the full Oval Office video, which I did earlier, President Trump actually exercised a lot of patience for the first probably 20 to 30 minutes. He let Zelensky just run his trap for 20 minutes, unopposed, unchallenged, uncorrected, just run his mouth in the Oval Office. And Chris, what's up with not wearing a suit?
He was asked about that by a reporter.
I mean, it drives me crazy. The amount of disrespect here is infuriating.
Yes. Well, you know, he travels the world wearing his fatigues. And he's always got his hand out, and he's asking for money. Again, American taxpayers have chipped in far more than anybody else on planet Earth. That was an actual question from a reporter today. Do you own a suit? You're always traveling around here. And he went on to say that you're in the Oval Office, and you're wearing pajamas. I'm using right. He used a different term. Casual wear, something of that sort.
I'm wearing a flannel shirt.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing that's always struck me about Mr. Zelensky, and granted, I've never been in his shoes and had to oversee a country that's fighting off an invader. But I don't know anybody else in my 43 years on planet Earth that jet sets around the world and has time for like Vogue cover shoots
with the first lady
while your country is fighting people.
That's a good point. Yeah, the not wearing a suit is just one of 100 reasons why Zelensky doesn't have respect for America and doesn't have respect for the Trump administration. But folks, we have to, listen to me, we have to get out of this George Bush, Barack Obama mindset that America needs to be the policeman on the world stage.
Mm-hmm.
We have to get out of the mindset. And here's why. Because we can go back and forth on whether America ought to be, whether that's worked in the past, right, of American intervention on the world stage. Has that worked or has it not? That would be an interesting debate. And in some cases, it's worked. In some cases, it hasn't. That would be the end of the debate. But now, in 2025, the latest example of this American intervention is nothing more than the Middle East, of which we spent $8 trillion. And that's a conservative estimate. We spent $8 trillion, thousands of American boots on the ground, thousands of American deaths of soldiers, of military members in the Middle East. And when we pulled out of Afghanistan in an embarrassing fashion, that was it. That was kind of the end of the American intervention in the Middle East, in large part. We've still got boots on the ground over there. But it ended, Chris, in a rather embarrassing fashion. And I say that with all due respect to every military member that put their life on the line for our country over there and obeyed the lawful orders of the president and the commanders. So this isn't a disrespect for anybody on the ground over there. This is a criticism of our leadership.
Yes.
In Washington, D.C. But Chris, looking at the past 20 to 30 years, you can't objectively look at that and go, that went well. That was a success, and America ought to continue endlessly intervening in other people's conflicts.
Yeah. I say this as the son of a Vietnam veteran, okay? And my wife's grandfather fought in Korea. God bless him. The last war that we fought and fought well, and the last war that really made sense was World War II.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've actually seen veterans from what was then called the Korean conflict and Vietnam conflict. I've seen veterans argue over the just poor decisions from presidents and bureaucrats over those particular things. And, you know, at some point it does need to stop. Even Biden's reasoning was we can't keep fighting over here.
Yes.
With Afghanistan. And yes. Certainly the pullout was a disaster.
Yeah.
You know, I think Trump is trying to learn from that. And you're right. He was very reserved in how he handled Zelensky today.
Yeah.
It was not the Trump you saw in a debate with like Kamala Harris.
Right.
It was more of the, I'm going to sit back and let you harm yourself
yeah.
with your words, like
let's
we saw with
debate.
That Biden debate.
Yeah, let's have this debate. And President Trump let him talk, and it didn't work out very well for him. But Chris, I think as far as where we go from here, but first, before we go talk about where we go from here, let me kind of play the last clip here. This was a Fox Business comment on how Zelensky's in a weak position. Mm-hmm. So let's not forget, folks, Ukraine needs the U.S., or at least they say they do. NATO and Europe say that America's needed here. But let's listen to the fact that Zelensky's the one in the weak position here. Clip three.
Look, Zelensky, Trump is right and Vance was right. Zelensky is in a very, very weak and vulnerable position. $350 billion. And the American people have made it very clear that they are done and they are not going to support this anymore. That is why there was a lot of celebration around the minerals deal, which, again, that conversation got derailed, as we all just witnessed on our televisions together. But let's be clear here. Without the backing of the United States, Europe, Putin could very well completely bulldoze Ukraine and keep going. The Trump administration knows that. Marco Rubio, who was in the room, the Secretary of State, he knows that.
All right, so there you have it. Zelensky's the one in the weak position here. Chris, I think the Trump position now, after this fiasco in the Oval Office mm-hmm. that was brought about by Zelensky, I think the U.S. position is, okay, you don't like the mineral rights deal? That's fine. You're under no obligation to enter this deal, although I think they should because they owe us.
Mm-hmm.
But in the future, we're done. America's not sending another penny or another weapon to Ukraine. And then you, Zelensky, and all your buddies in Europe, y'all can figure out how to work in your own backyard here.
Yeah. I mean, as a taxpayer, I would be completely fine with telling a lot of people in this world, hey, you got yourself into that mess, you figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what needs to happen here. Because if you're going to come, if you're going to want America's support, and you're going to want our money and our weapons, then there's going to be strings attached. That's a fact. And this virtue signaling talking point about, well, America's leadership shouldn't have strings attached. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Every deal, every peace deal, every business deal, every foreign policy deal, every military deal, folks, has strings attached.
Yes.
So spare me this moral high ground of America's sovereignty. What's the cost of freedom? A mineral rights deal? Give me a break, people. We've spent $300 billion, and there's nothing to show for it other than tens of thousands of Russians and Ukrainians dead in the trenches.
Mm-hmm.
And the killing has to end. That's the Trump position.
Same thing with the what I was trying to say. And again, God bless veterans of recent wars. We appreciate you. You're the reason we're still able to operate. But again, poor decisions made by people over the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s are the reasons why we're deeply in debt.
Yeah.
And there's still instability in places. It was for nothing.
Right. And let's not forget that it was Europe and NATO member countries that emboldened Putin. Oh, well, what do you mean by that? Well, they were buying all of their energy from Putin before the war and after the war. And now today, folks, mark my word, NATO member countries are still buying their gas from mm-hmm. none other than Vladimir Putin.
And the price is going up.
And the price is going up because they have nowhere else to get it other than the U.S., and the costs are high there because of the transport
It'll
cost.
Go up after today for sure.
Yeah. So Ukraine, NATO, and Europe combined, NATO member countries and other European nations are funding in part the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And so if we want to talk about moral high ground and decision making and who's responsible, there's a lot of things that NATO member countries can do to help Ukraine. And one of them is to stop buying their oil and their gas from Russia.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.